This is a bonus episode of the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lay.
Tina, right now you own some rental properties, right?
I do. I have 11 rental houses I inherited from my father. And I want to build my portfolio.
And financially, where do you want to go with your rentals? Like, do you have a number in your head of where you want to be with your rental income?
Yeah, I'm about $5,500 a month now, and I'd like to get to about $10,000.
We're going to do something a little bit different on the podcast today. One of the services that Shaylee Ridge from Ridge Lending Group offers her clients is that she kind of coaches them and shows them how they can get to wherever they want to go income-wise with their rental property. She kind of helps them strategize. And I'm going to hand over the podcast to Shaylee and let her help out Tina and figure out how Tina can get to where she wants to go. So Shaylee, what's the game plan? How are you going to do this?
Yeah, so we're going to take a look at this holistically, right? Not transactionally. And we're going to see where Tina is today from an underwriting and qualification perspective. We know where she wants to go. So we're going to work all that together and figure out what plan, what kind of roadmap are we going to come up with? We're going to start planting seeds, and then we're going to take one step at a time so that we can, within ideally the shortest amount of time possible, help her achieve what she wants to do out of this.
Awesome. This sounds like it's going to be really interesting. So here's what we'll do. We'll take a really quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll listen in on Tina and Shaylee. I've been looking for a new rental to add to my portfolio, and as I've been going through this process, it's reminded me how important it is for everybody to have an estate plan. With Trust and Will, you can create and manage your own custom estate plan, starting at just $199. And if you go to trustandwill.com/RIP, you'll get 10% off plus free document shipping. Two things I love about Trust and Will are, number one, it's so simple. Their website walks you through a series of questions, and at the end, you get your will. It's very straightforward. And the other thing I love is that it's very affordable. Trust and Will has made estate planning accessible and affordable for everybody. There's really no reason not to use Trust and Will to get your will done. Check them out. They have thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot. Secure your assets and protect your loved ones with Trust and Will. Get 10% off plus free shipping of your estate plan documents by visiting trustandwill.com/RIP. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/RIP. I want to let you know about a really easy way to track your rental income and expenses. It's an accounting software custom made for rental property investors. It takes just seconds to enter an expense or to record that you collected rent. It makes tax time really easy. Just run a report and give it to your tax person and you are done. They're currently offering a free 30-day trial. There's no credit card required, so if you don't like it, there's nothing to cancel. You can learn more and sign up today at rentaltrial.com. That's rentaltrial, T-R-I-A-L, rentaltrial.com.
Rental Income Podcast.
So what I want from you, in as little or as much detail as you want to give me, is I really want to get a feel for those goals. Okay, we're going to talk about short term first, and then just layer in, you know, as it comes up, long term and long term if you want.
I would like to pull the equity out of my rental properties and my house to be able to purchase more real estate is my end goal.
Okay.
So that's where I've started out. My daughter wants to move south to be closer to her dad. And so we thought we would try to find a duplex or a triplex or something down there to help her finance, you know, financially, so she's not hit so hard with a mortgage payment. I'd like to buy one, like maybe in Belize, or, you know, I'd like to have a place somewhere that I could rent out weekly. and have a vacation spot. I just want to keep building my portfolio.
Okay. So I'm hearing you say that really we want to harvest the equity, right? To its highest degree. You've got a lot of free and clear properties. Use that, you know, strategically, maybe not all at once, I would assume. And find the different markets that you want to acquire more properties in. You mentioned short-term rentals. Can I assume that you want to do a mix of the shorter-term rentals and also long-term, like what you have now? Or do you really want to just focus on the short-term?
I would love to own a property in Florida somewhere on the Gulf Coast, and I would like that to be short-term so that it could help pay for itself. That's what I'm at.
Okay. What about, Tina, what about property type? Single family versus 2-4? I know that the next acquisition, we want to find something that's a 2-4 so that Alexis can have one of the units and you're still keeping it as a cash flowing rental property. But overall, is the objective any and all open to whatever is going to give you the greatest return or the most appropriate return?
Yes, that's, you know, I'm thinking multifamily, you know, apartment. I want to work towards that. I think that will get me to where I want to be much quicker.
When we talk about the different markets, appreciation versus cash flow, and while there's always exceptions to the rule, generally speaking, in the States, the higher the appreciation, the lower the cash flow, and vice versa. Unless the market has a strong short-term rental, in which case you can get a little bit of both. Is that another place that we want to find a good balance with? I feel like your current portfolio, which is substantial, how many properties do you have? 12?
12.
Okay.
That including the house in Myrtle Beach that I sold on a land contract.
Okay. But I feel like here, let's just go in there and take a peek real quick. I feel like the area of those rentals, they're all in, it's more of cash flow, right? Are they all Wisconsin? Yeah, they're all Wisconsin. So my assumption is that those are going to be primarily cash flow properties versus appreciation. Are these in areas of Wisconsin where appreciation is especially strong, or are they really just about the cash flow there?
Well, I think, you know, I just had my house appraised and it bumped up $100,000 just from last year. Yeah.
The reason for this line of questioning is, I mean, big picture is I want to try and present some kind of balance, okay? And depending on how risk averse or aggressive the individual is, I kind of have these baseline formulas when we start talking about the diversity of real estate, right? The different markets, cash flow versus appreciation, single family versus 2-4. So the reason that I'm asking these questions is just to kind of come up with a roadmap that sort of identifies for us, okay, of everything that we want to accomplish in the next year, 5 years, 10 years, here's the baseline, right? 70% of what you're going to acquire is going to be for as cash flow heavy as we can versus 30%. We're going to be looking at appreciating markets, right? That still have to cash flow. But like I said a minute ago, there's usually a disconnect between the higher the cash flow, the lower the appreciation and vice versa. Not always, but sometimes. And just kind of figuring out where that balance is and making sure that you've got a rounded portfolio, I think is the point here. And it sounds like just listening to you talk, organically, you're going to be there, right? I think that you've got some properties that are cash flowing. It's taken you a while for them to get there. You inherited maybe something that you know, the rents weren't being collected as high as they should be. Are you appreciating those rents every year by 2-3%?
Right now I've decided I'm going to start doing it twice a year. Okay. I do $25 every year is what I've been doing. And I think I'm pretty low on my rent.
Okay. We can look at that too in a separate call. But so here's what I would say. It sounds like you want to be fairly aggressive, right? You have access to the equity and the properties. Short-term rental seems to be a primary objective of yours. And I think that you'll be able to accomplish several objectives by looking in a state like Florida and a short-term rental, because I think you're going to have heavy cash flow
and you're going to be able to get that appreciation play in a market like Florida. Generally speaking, it's the Sunbelt states that you're going to find the highest appreciation, right? Just kind of the outer skirts of the United States, typically. Now, if you were to move over and look at properties on my side of the U.S., right, the Pacific Northwest or California, yes, great appreciation, but I don't even know on the short-term rentals how significant the cash flow is here. I think it's a little bit more depressed because the price points are higher and rents, et cetera. I don't know. But from a strategy perspective, I think Florida is going to accomplish much of that. The first purchase, we're dead set on South Carolina. That's where Alexis's dad is, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I think that that's another market that we might be able to accomplish multiple things with one purchase. We're going to get a 2-4. And this kind of leads into the next part of advice that I usually give when we try to do that balancing short-term appreciation, high cash flow. A 2-4 unit property in the right market, you could do, let's say one of the units is a long-term rental and one or two of them as a short term, right? You could get 2-for-1 inside a 2-4 unit property, keeping in mind that the 2-4 unit, here's the, like, if I play devil's advocate for you, the 2-4 is not going to appreciate usually as higher or as quick as a single family will. But if you're on a Sunbelt state, you're still going to get some appreciation. And I think in some ways, I'm starting to kind of get a sense that that may be changing, that appreciation ideal that a single family residence is always going to appreciate greater than a 2-4. I kind of feel like there may be a shift there because so many people that I talk to are dying to get their hands on these 2-4 unit properties, and there just aren't that many of them. So who knows? Maybe that's a sign of the times and that might change. A lot of people would argue that the single family is a lower risk property, right? You've only got one tenant that you're working with and having to collect rent from, et cetera, versus 3 or 4 different families. The flip to that argument, I think, would be that if one of the units goes unrented on a fourplex, you still have 3 other people making that mortgage payment, right? Versus your single family, if it goes unrented, clearly you're stroking a check for that mortgage payment if there is one. Okay, so let me get back on track. So big picture diversification. Again, if you want to be aggressive, I think that the short-term rental is probably where you want to focus your attention, but I would caution you to say, be real clear about the different markets that you're going to be looking in, because the Airbnbs and the VRBOs and things of that nature, we're finding that the different municipalities and cities, I can tell you Hawaii has already established some of this in certain areas of the islands where they will not allow short-term rentals. So before you get into a specific market that you think that this is what you want to do for, just make sure that the, you know, city, it's probably the city zoning is where you're probably going to want to look at your agent. If you're working with a turnkey agent, they should know this. If there's any ruling or pending ruling about short-term rentals in that market or even neighborhood, right? Because that would suck if you wanted to get into a short-term rental, everything's good to go, and you buy it under that precipice, then find out that you know, in 2 months from now, it's no longer allowed.
Right.
The other thing that I always mention about short-term rentals for clients that are looking at it, you know, it may not just be for vacation rentals, right? There's a whole subset of professionals that travel for work. Nurses, for example, pilots, flight attendants, that kind of thing. You could market the short-term rentals for something like that. And I almost feel like that might be even more advantageous because, you know, they're professionals, right? They're there just probably to crash. They're not there partying and vacationing in the property. It's probably their crash pad as they're there on commission work. So that might be something else to consider on the short-term rental. I may just kind of get rid of the long-term here because you've already got so many of those. Maybe we really if something comes up, keep your options open, but maybe just kind of focal point would be for the short term. Let me add South Carolina in here. All right, so let's talk about timeline. So if we know that we want to net, let's just say 5, right? It's a nice round number. If we want to net $5,000 a month, I would assume that for timeline, you'd say you want this to happen yesterday, But realistically, what's your timeline? What are you thinking where this would be? A year, 5 years, 10 years? What do you think for you?
In about 3 years is what I'd like.
So if we work that backwards, right? And I may just start by doing some silly, simple math and say, okay, that means that we need to figure out how to acquire enough property. And that could be one, and it could be two, it could be three, that's going to net with leverage, meaning that the new property is going to have a loan on it, right? It needs to net about what, 1500. That does not seem unrealistic to me at all, especially if we're going to focus on the short-term rental. So for underwriting purposes, what we're going to focus on, at least for now, is we're going to focus on the Fannie Freddies, right? We want to max out the 10 golden tickets. You've heard that per qualified individual, there are 10. And if we want to start layering in Alexis into this too, maybe we can start looking at ways to get her to qualify and for her own 10, right? So that would be a separate conversation. But for now, we'll just focus on you and what comes next. So we're going to have, after we close on this and the other Hay property, and we've got Summit, right? That'll be three finance properties. You'll have 7 more golden tickets, okay? The reason that it's important for me to define that as it relates to credit will come in just a second. So let's talk about credit. Most individuals come to us with 3 credit scores. Okay. These credit scores are derived from entities that I call repositories. You're going to know them as Experian and TransUnion and Equifax, right? You can see my screen.
Yep.
Okay. For mortgage related finance, we're going to take the middle of these 3. There we go. 765, which is fantastic. You're in the top 1 percentile of the nation. Whatever you're doing with your credit, keep doing it. Are you familiar with what a credit report looks like or how to read a trade line?
Yeah.
Okay. So we don't need to get into any of that. So here's what, now let's lace back in the finance properties and how that impacts a credit score. So we know we've got 10 golden tickets. There's 2 different books, we're going to call them, of underwriting guidelines as it applies to credit. The first book is going to be applicable to the loans that fall in 1 through 6. And then there's a second set of guidelines or a second book of guideline that applies to those that are going to go into the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. The guidelines for 1 through 6 are kind of vague. There's really no hard and fast. It's kind of vague, actually. We've had clients that have maybe a 650 credit score get approved because they have compensating factors, strong debt to income ratio, or AKA low debt to income ratio, strong assets, that kind of thing. For you and your purposes, starting with a 765, there will be zero reason that we will ever need to discuss credit score as a means of qualifying in the first 6 spots, right? So just don't even worry about it. What happens, though, is that when we get into or we inch into the 7 through 10, they will raise the qualification bar on us. And now there is a hard and fast. The individual must maintain a minimum middle credit score of 720 or greater, right? Maybe you've heard some of this. Again, starting at a 765, I don't know that there's going to be too much conversation about credit, with one exception, okay? And this might apply to you. And even if it doesn't, I think it's worth commenting. There's something called rapid acquisition, okay? In the event that the individual has purchased several properties within a smallish window of time, let's call it 3 or 4 properties inside 3 or 4 months, okay? Rapid acquisition. I have seen very high credit scores, 850 credit scores drop below that 720 mark. In that case, what's happening is that the algorithms, the ones and the zeros within the repositories, right, the Equifax and the TransUnion and Experian, it's tied to your social security number. So all it's seeing is this massive amount of debt that's being loaded to your social, your profile, okay? Mm-hmm. What it's not seeing yet is that the on-time mortgage payments haven't started. Okay, so it's just seeing all of this debt. It's thinking maybe you're about to become overextended. So the score may drop temporarily below that 720 mark. Usually we see about a 30 to 60 day post last acquisition. So 30 or 60 days past the last purchase, we start to see the scores rebound back to where they started, maybe even higher. All right. Now here's the optimization trick. As long as our communication is good, here's what we'll do with our clients. The credit report itself is valid for 120 days before a new one is necessary, Okay. So if I know what's coming down the pike and I know that we've got two properties under contract right now, and maybe there's another two or three that will come up in another 30 or 60 days, I'm going to look at your credit report and say, okay, we pulled this on this date. Before these two mortgages hit, let's say on day 64 of the 120-day window for that credit report, I'm going to pull a new report, right? Before we have any impact or effect on that multiple acquisition. And I've just bought us a new 120 days at the optimized higher score before there's been any effect to it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So the key to that is really just communication, right? We just want to know what's coming and when, or ideally, right? Some things change. But as long as I know, I can prepare in advance to say, okay, this credit report was, so in this case, in your case, it was pulled on April 28th, May, June, July, August, right? Depending on what we have going on from the remainder of the year, we'll be looking at that and making sure that we're pulling again before there's any temporary dip. If we're getting closer, inching into that 7 through 10, that probably won't apply to you this year or this go, right? Because you're going to have another three. I can't imagine that you're going to be purchasing more than another three to get you into that 7 through 10 anyway. But those are the things that we're going to want to look for when we get to that benchmark. Comments, questions about that?
No. Well, I do want to talk to you about something relating to what I got going on right now, something that mm-hmm. I had started back in October. I purchased three buildings, small buildings. Mm-hmm. One is a tiny home. The other one is a storage shed. But I'm developing a campsite. I just want to keep it low key. But I'm developing a campsite on my property, and I'm moving these buildings. One is a tiny home. It's finished completely. I still have to move it, but I just gave the person the check the other day for it. So
okay.
That was what I had got the HELOC for. You know, I have the mm-hmm. that money sitting there. So I pulled it out of my HELOC and it's in my account. So I just want to let you know that it's for $15,000. This is something I started back in October of last year, but I couldn't get the houses moved until just recently. So
happy. Well, and that's good. You know, that communication really at the end of the day, that's all that's important. As long as we know what's happening and that disclosure, I understand the guidelines like the back of my hand, Tina. So as long as I know what's coming at me, I can navigate the battleship in a creek. So perfect that we're having this conversation. I'm just going to open up your credit folder for your primary residence. I want to look at the HELOC because what we have, so at the time when we started the pre-qual, right, we had a balance of about 8,000. The payment reporting was about 24. So what I'll do is I'll look for the terms of the actual line of credit, or maybe they're on here. I'm going to calculate a new payment, right, based on you took an additional 15. So it's 15 plus 8.
Yep.
Okay, so 23,000. Let's see, if there's a rate on here, then I would calculate what the new payment would be, and I would simply adjust. Here we go.
I think it's six. I think.
What, six?
6%, yeah.
I say it one more time. Six what?
6%.
Six even. Okay. So then yeah. I'm going to take, what is that, 25,000. It's interest only, I assume.
Yep.
Six. Very easy calculation for me is going to be, so it's going to be about $125 a month. So what I would do with that information is I'm going to go here. I'm going to find the HELOC. Now, I believe, let's see. Yeah, we're going to be paying this guy off anyway with our refinance. So simply what that means is that this $8,000 balance that we had when we pulled credit is now going to be higher. So the cash back to you will simply be less, $15,000, than what we had expected. So I don't even need to change the payment because, right, it's not going to be an issue. It's not going to be there. It's going to be paid off. But if it weren't, let's just say it was its own HELOC, I would simply adjust the payment in here. I'd get an updated statement from you, adjust the payment in here, and see how it affected us here in the DTI space. And we'll get into that right? I told you that that one's a little bit more complicated. So we'll spend some extra time on DTI, but you have a little bit of room. And I'm going to say something to you here in closing and open for any questions that you have. This is something that past today and present conversations, if there's one takeaway from these discussions, you've actually probably already heard me say this, and I'm going to say it again, another point, but filing federal tax returns while we're on, while we've got our plan, carving out our plan to reach these certain goals, filing federal tax returns before I've seen a draft version and reviewed and crunched the numbers, and we'll do it together even, could be very damaging. So the point I'm trying to make is that if you want to qualify in any given year for the best terms available, do not file any more federal tax returns until I've seen the draft. Together, we'll do an exercise that takes the Schedule E information, right where your rental properties are. We'll run them through the pre-formulated worksheet. It calculates for us, and you can see how the pluses and minuses work. And with that, I can give you advice, right? It may be to file an extension. It might be to carry some losses forward, et cetera, et cetera. We'll go into all of that. But that would be one thing that, above all, is probably the most important when it comes to optimizing your qualifications for mortgage-related credit.
After we recorded this session, Tina came across a property she was interested in, and she wanted Chaley to take a look at it and run some numbers, and here's what happened.
So the property that I see here, Tina, that you're that we're interested in and just kind of running the numbers and seeing how your qualifications fare is, this looks like a 4-unit property in South Carolina. List price is $599,900. I'm just going to round it to $600 in our numbers. The annual rents you mentioned at $43,000, that comes out to be $3,583 a month is what I'm going to use for the 75% of to help offset the mortgage payment. The listing shows that the property taxes are running at about $255 a month, and the homeowner's insurance is at about $210 a month. No HOA fees, right? So all of those pluses and minuses. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to take that data, and I'm going to put it into the TBD profile that we made for you and see how the numbers run and what it does or how it impacts your debt-to-income ratio. 25% down. Using 6.625. Yeah, so based on the numbers, we've got 3361 as the total PITI, okay? I'm only able to give you 75% of the 3583, which gives us a small loss monthly on paper of $70, a loss of $70 a month. When these numbers get plugged in, your debt-to-income ratio exceeds the 50%. So this particular property at those rents is not going to fly. Now, I may argue that on a $600,000 property, that $3,500 a month seems excessively low. So I would question that $43,000 a year, Tina, especially for a 4-unit. I mean, that's telling me that the units aren't even rented for $1,000 a piece, right? Doesn't that seem, it seems, let's go back to the listing and see if we see anything in there. Because I would venture that that's wrong, $43,000 a year. And that came from the agent.
Yeah.
Gross rents are going to need to come in at $4,500 for this property to be viable in the DTI column. Okay. Right? So you'll see what I've done here. $4,500, right? 75% is what I get to give you. Minus the proposed PITI puts my DTI at 49%. This property works at 4,500, which in my mind, I still think is low. But check back with the agent, because that, you know, usually what I see is that the 2 to 4 units in most areas are over the 1% rule, right? And the 1% is going to be equal to 1% of the purchase price. So if 600 grand is the purchase price, we hope to have rents of 6,000. Right? At least on a 2 to 4.
Right.
Anyway, that's how I would be looking at this. If I throw 6,000 in, DTI is down at 35.8%. So I think in terms of the properties, keep looking. I know that South Carolina is a particular market that you're interested in. Double check on the rents for this, or maybe that's what they're rented at now. And there are tenants in there that have been, you know, living way below market for a long time, and that they're going to have to either pay more or you're going to have to get new renters in there at market rents.
It doesn't sound like this deal is going to work out. Chaley, let's talk about an action plan for Tina. So you suggested that adding $5,000 a month in net cash flow sounds pretty obtainable. So if we were to kind of think of a hypothetical portfolio for her, like, what do you suggest that she do from here?
Yeah, well, for Tina's circumstances, it looks like a pretty easy move. So first of all, we're going to identify of her free and clear properties that she owns now, which we're going to be leveraging, right? Harvest that equity, borrowed funds are non-taxable. We're going to take that and then purchase the other properties to then gain the cash flow that she's looking for. And I think for her, and given where I think she wants to go in the U.S. and things, a fourplex is kind of what we had talked about, what I'm recommending, because in that scenario for her, we're going to be able to accomplish multiple things with maybe one extra purchase. As such, maybe Florida, I think she was interested in, for example, and a fourplex. What we can look at doing is maybe we make two of the units for long-term rents, right? That you got a year or two-year leases, and retain one or two of the other units for the shorter term, either vacation Airbnb and or the professional traveling nurse, for example. Mm-hmm. Maybe split it up a little bit that way. And given that scenario or that dynamic, I think that we're going to be able to achieve, maybe even exceed, the net cash flow she's looking to round out her portfolio for.
Okay, so really that's all she needs is just that one purchase. If she can get a fourplex cheap enough and the numbers work, like, she should be able to clear $5,000 a month.
I think that's very reasonable, yes.
Awesome. Yeah, I really like the traveling nurse as an Airbnb, because that really just kind of kicks your cash. It really just kind of accentuates your cash flow. You're going to make so much more money with those two units.
Yeah, and I think that too, if we're looking at it and we're diversifying the portfolio in one purchase, I think we're also looking at a mitigated risk scenario, because we are keeping two long term or one or two, or we're taking four units and we're really in one property with one down payment. We're able to diversify long-term, short-term risk tolerances, appreciation, all of those different variables that we really want to make sure that we're balancing our portfolio with.
And another option that she had talked about was buying Airbnbs. So if she decided not to go the fourplex route, would it be reasonable to find an Airbnb in some resort area that would profit $5,000 a month?
In the right area, absolutely, and maybe more. I mean, there's areas that are, you know, high vacation areas. The coastal markets usually is where you're going to find that. The Ozarks, maybe, but the seasonal rentals. I think that a lot of people that have started to look at this and are doing it now are surprised that they're tripling what they thought they might do. And maybe some of that is circumstantial to coming out of a pandemic, right? I want to make sure I'm painting the right picture for everybody. People want to get out, right? They want to be out. They want to kind of get back to their normal lives and things. So as great as we're seeing the returns on those shorter term vacation rentals, maybe that sustains for a long time, or you know, maybe it backs off a little bit. I still think that should be included in anybody's rounded balanced portfolio.
I really like the way that you took, as you said earlier in the show, a holistic approach to figuring out what Tina wanted to do, and you helped her put a plan together. And I think it's just so much better than going transactional and just adding properties randomly without a real plan. And I really think that this is something everybody should really consider doing, having a roadmap to help you get to where you want to go. So, Chaley, if somebody wants to talk to you and they want to figure out how they can get to where they want to go, what's the best way for someone to reach out to you and set up a time to kind of strategize on what they want to do?
Yeah, so they can reach us a multitude of ways. They can check out our website, ridgelendinggroup.com. They can call us toll-free at 855-747-4343. 855-74-RIDGE is an easy way to remember that one. And then info@ridgelendinggroup.com is the email. And what they really want to do is they want to start off by applying, right? They want to get their application in. We want to gather their documents, the vials of blood, right? An oldie but a goodie. Get everything on file so that we understand what their qualifications are. And after that, that's when we will schedule the appointment to discuss what their goals are. And then we're going to layer in the education on top of that. And that's when we'll start planting seeds and coming up with the plan for them.
And this is basically, I mean, this is a real call that people just listen to. So this is something, once they apply, they could set up a call with you and have a very similar conversation.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks for checking out this bonus episode of the podcast. I'll be back with a regular interview on Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast. Shopping for life insurance can be very time-consuming. It takes a lot of time to talk to a couple different agents, get their quotes, and then find the lowest price. Well, I want to let you know about a better way to find the best life insurance policy for you. It's Policy Genius. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. I have a life insurance policy, and it's a great feeling to know that if something were to happen to me, my family is not going to struggle financially. It just gives me really good peace of mind to know that they're going to be taken care of. And what I love about Policy Genius is they make it so easy. You can go on their website, you can compare all your options from all the top insurance companies, you can find your lowest price, but sometimes it's good to talk to somebody, and Policy Genius has a whole team of licensed insurance experts that are on hand. They'll get on the phone with you, they'll hold your hand through the entire process. It could not be easier. So check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. I've been looking for a new rental to add to my portfolio, and as I've been going through this process, it's reminded me how important it is for everybody to have an estate plan. With Trust and Will, you can create and manage your own custom estate plan starting at just $199. And if you go to trustandwill.com/RIP, you'll get 10% off plus free document shipping. Two things I love about Trust and Will are, number one, it's so simple. Their website walks you through a series of questions, and at the end, you get your will. It's very straightforward. And the other thing I love is that it's very affordable. Trust and Will has made estate planning accessible and affordable for everybody. There's really no reason not to use Trust and Will to get your will done. Check them out. They have thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot. Secure your assets and protect your loved ones with Trust and Will. Get 10% off plus free shipping of your estate plan documents by visiting trustandwill.com/RIP. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/RIP. Shopping for life insurance can be very time-consuming. It takes a lot of time to talk to a couple different agents, get their quotes, and then find the lowest price. Well, I want to let you know about a better way to find the best life insurance policy for you. It's Policy Genius. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. I have a life insurance policy, and it's a great feeling to know that if something were to happen to me, my family is not going to struggle financially. It just gives me really good peace of mind to know that they're going to be taken care of. And what I love about Policy Genius is they make it so easy. You can go on their website, you can compare all your options from all the top insurance companies, you can find your lowest price, but sometimes it's good to talk to somebody, and Policy Genius has a whole team of licensed insurance experts that are on hand. They'll get on the phone with you, they'll hold your hand through the entire process. It could not be easier. So check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.